Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing very good today. How about you?
I'm doing great today, too. Thanks for asking. And we'd like to thank you all for tuning in. Today in the Voice of Yoga, we will talk about the scriptural idea of serving two masters and why it doesn't work. Listen as we explain how spirit is all and the mental material appearance is nothing when divine truth is realized. In this show, we will explore this statement: you render the divine law of healing obscure and void when you weigh the human in the scale with the divine, or limit in any direction of thought the omnipresence and omnipotence of God. End of quote. And that was from Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, page 445, line 15. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga spiritual advance to get the light in your soul and be a faithful witness to the divine creation. Swami, I see that title of today's show is Looking to Heaven While Clinging to Earth. Can you explain to us what we mean by that statement?
Yeah, we really want to talk about this idea of trying to serve two masters. Trying to accept yourself to be a finite mortal being and at the same time to be an immortal spiritual being. In our show a couple of weeks ago, Potency is Obedience to Principle, we quoted Bicknell Young in Addresses, and I'll read it. We cannot deny a thing and make it real at the same time. Or maybe something a little more detailed. When you read Matthew 6, 21 to 25, I'll read it. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat, or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? End of quote. So I think in this show, what I'd really like to focus on is why it doesn't seem like we're able to get the results Scripture promises. This idea of looking to spiritual identity at the same time clinging to this mortal sense of self. And without good leadership in how to come out of this belief in mortality, we have a tendency to think we're spiritual when we are. I really like what it says in Revelations, looks like a lamb but speaks like a dragon. We miss the mark. Or the term in yoga is avidya, ignorance, mistaking the impermanent for the permanent.
It is interesting. It does seem like every time that we need a problem to be solved or whatever's going on in our life, we always look to heaven for the answer. But it seems to me it would be much better off for us if we looked to heaven for everything, not just when we feel like we have a need to fix a problem.
Yeah, this idea of clinging to earth. By educating thought up to spiritual apprehension, we begin to learn the secret success of letting divine mind take over the scientific government of the body. In the light of divine omnipresence, there is only one being, and it's perfect. Not my will, but thy will be done. Once we have established trust in the divine principle, the omnipresence, your material senses is seeing what isn't there. The only thing that is there is the divine creative principle. And we initially begin by believing in that. But at some point, we have to begin to test it. You have to develop faith in your understanding. The only thing where I stand is divine truth, the spirit of the divine principle, and then begin to trust that. Because what is appearing in your material senses is never real. What Mary Baker Eddy says in Science and Health, sometimes beautiful, always erroneous. What's appearing in the five material senses, after a while, just becomes your monitor. It's the check engine light on the dashboard of consciousness. It's letting us know, am I sowing to the spirit or am I sowing to the flesh? What is appearing in your material senses is what you are conscious of. So as Jesus said, if thine eye is single, which means now you are thinking with divine mind. Divine mind thinks in the absolute. If your eye is evil, which means that it's seeing duality, it is seeing the mental material concept of the divine creation, which is a good and evil belief system, then you're living in darkness. You miss the mark. You live in sin. But one of the things we have learned is this outer world of sense and this inner world of spirit become one when divine truth is the only consciousness. By serving two masters, you create this interference pattern. You short-circuit the divine creative principle, and the only thing you're left with is this dualistic concept about life where all our problems appear.
So I think we all want this success of letting this divine mind take over, but let's talk about how to get there. So earlier when you had said we need to educate thought up to spiritual apprehension, what does that mean? And then what does it look like when we're doing it? Because it seems like that sounds like an action that we have to learn how to do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. First, we have to separate our identity from being individualized by the world mind. That's a process, the hero's journey, the separation, the journey, the return, the metamorphosis of a caterpillar. The caterpillar goes into a chrysalis where it shuts off the instincts, appetites of the physical form. But then it emerges as the butterfly, which has options the caterpillar doesn't. The human has this very similar process we have to develop. So we go from being careless, emotional, indulgent, reactive, controlled by the instincts and appetites of this false sense of self. At our lowest level of consciousness, we are driven by fear, the defense mechanism for the false sense of self. Now, we have to separate from that and then develop our psychological organs, human intelligence. You have to cultivate the mortal mind so that you are in a position where you're able to make conscious choices based on the rules of universal order. Mary Baker Eddy called that degree of understanding moral. However you want to describe that, whether it's moral or it's reasonable or it's intelligent, that is a phase in development we must earn, because only reason walks through the open door of revelation. So there's a lot of preparatory work that has to be in place. And the way this translates into human experience, if we are controlled by instinct, appetite, preservation, survival, commonly referred to as an addictive personality. We're driven by fear, and we have to be taught how to separate from that. The best way to get out from any unnecessary dependency is to substitute. But the secret of substitution is to substitute an unnecessary dependency for a necessary dependency. This is part of this idea of educating thought up to spiritual apprehension. To know the difference between what this mortal sense of life needs on a very fundamental level, because if you don't have that hierarchy of needs built into your value system, then you react to anything as if you think you need it. In mythology, they call that original state of consciousness chaos. You don't know the difference between a need, a want, or a sense of purpose. Everything is in an intermingled state of confusion. And then what happens in human development is this whole thing of separation, where you begin to work your psychological organs, things like discipline, purification, activities like fasting. These are all ways of developing the psychological organs so that now you can make conscious choices based on these values that are in accordance with universal order.
So, for example, we're in a grocery store and we're going down the baked goods aisle, and you're saying that we have to like really look and examine what it is we're thinking. So instead of putting a box of Twinkies in the cart, we want to be able to say, you know, I don't really need the box of Twinkies. I need something else that's much better for me. And that would be like the spiritual energy that we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. You develop this value system, and to know what the physical form needs, your number one life-sustaining force is thought. And what you'll learn is bad habits set up limitations, no matter what you do, whether you're involved in athletics, if you play a musical instrument, in business. If you have a bad habit, it sets up a limitation that won't enable you to advance beyond the limits of that habit until you correct it. Living is the same thing. If we don't think right, if we don't understand that your number one life-sustaining force is the omnipresence of divine spirit, spirit is life. And if you don't put that in its position of importance, like Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Whatever it is we think is valuable, that's what we are drawn to. We think it's valuable because on some deep level, it is a symbol that we associate with survival, preservation. I need whatever it is that I think is valuable. And so, say, for example, just like what you're saying, food. People put food in a position of importance that it doesn't warrant in their value system. And most of these foods that we ingest today have substances and chemicals in them that actually produce cravings for themselves. Refined sugar is like a drug. It's absorbed almost immediately into the blood. And so we develop an addiction for a substance. And then we respond as if we're in danger if we don't get it. Ideally, your number one life-sustaining force is spirit. But spirit is invisible and intangible, and when working with this false sense of self, the body is looking for something that it can sink its teeth into for validation. We come in with this programming. It looks for food, mother, approval on a very fundamental level for validation. Now, if you internalize food as your symbol for validation, the body lives in chronic anxiety. It is constantly searching. The problem with the physical body is it's blind. It has no power of discernment. And whatever you internalize as a symbol to validate it, it is constantly looking for it. So it's in search mode. The body sits there and it's Am I okay? Am I okay now? Am I still okay? Humanly, we learn how to manage this insatiable craving that's going on in the body. And we do it by going to the phone, to the computer, to the television, to the gym, to the refrigerator. But it's constantly looking to know that I'm okay. Now, once you begin to internalize the right symbols to produce the feeling that I'm okay, now you can achieve what we will call human calmness. And when you do that properly, you would maybe work with what we do in yoga, pranayama, the fourth stage of Kriya Yoga. But it's the science of control of prana. Prana in yoga is spirit, the invisible, intangible, omnipresence. There's a direct relationship between life-sustaining force number one, thought, and life-sustaining force number two, breath. And your rate of breath equals your rate of thought. By controlling your rate of breathing, you're controlling your rate of thinking. But it doesn't control the content. You still have to internalize the right image as the symbol for validation.
We're going to pause right here to hear a word from our sponsors. Listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 1. Human Development and the 8 Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga. This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information.
Welcome back. For those who are just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So I'd like to get back to this idea of fear and how we can control it or eliminate it from our lives and our mind.
Right. To begin to master the mind-body complex, we do. We begin by controlling the fear. Like we said, fear is a defense mechanism for the false sense of self. And once we allay the fear, we have more freedom to move the mind away from the material into the mental realms and then eventually into the spirit. Fear of death is the underlying motivator for false sense because false sense believes in death or life with end. In truth, life is all. And it not only never dies, but it never departs. Life can't go anywhere because life is everywhere. As we become conscious of this truth and begin to let go of the appearances, we see the false fears only apply to the mental material forms believed in. Mortality is a belief, and God is the reality. We've been doing it backwards and can't figure out why it isn't working.
So you're saying we have to realize that God is all, and that helps us allay the fear that you mentioned earlier?
Exactly. Now, if God, eternal life, the changeless state of being, is all, then we have to start to question what it is that we're calling life, what is appearing in our material senses, this finite sense of life. That's why Jesus said, I am come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. What we're calling life isn't what Jesus is calling life. That was the message of the Christ. You're living in the wrong self. Now, what we're learning, there is a process to graduating from living in a finite mortal sense of life and then accepting spiritual identity. We don't make this finite mortal sense of life immortal. We come out of the belief that we're in this false sense of existence.
We have a soundbite here from Herb Fitch, and this is from the Realization of Oneness, Class 15A, that I think that we should play now for our listeners.
Yeah, and if anybody's interested in the full audio file or the complete program, you can get this at mysticalprinciples.com, and I'll play it.
That's why Lazarus must talk. Animation, sensation, movement are not life. And they are not sustained by God for that reason. So we dwell now in the knowledge that my spiritual self is what stands where the world has always seen its mortal sense of me. Where you stand in your so-called mortal self, there is a spiritual you that you must come to know. Now, we must look at motherhood another way. The form is not divinely created or sustained. That which is not divinely created or sustained is not life, but is imitation of life. It is an image, a mental concept, a world mind picture appearing locally in time space. Now, as you look at it, knowing, learning, and finally reaching the conviction that the Christ teaching is that the only substance here is the substance of God, the Spirit of God, Christ of God, the essence of God, and that human form is not that essence, ask yourself if that which is not God created can really be here. If it is not God created, it is not God sustained, it is not God's substance, if it is not living, if it is not real, is it here? And then you come to the final conclusion that form is not here. That Lazarus didn't die, form which is not here couldn't die, that rebirth isn't dying to form. Rebirth is dying to the illusion of form. And ask yourself if a form that is not here can give birth to a child. How does a form not created by God, which is therefore an unreal form, give birth to a real form? You're born, you think, but how? How could a form be born of a form that does not exist? Do you see then the acceptance of form, and form giving birth to form leads to form dying, and all this is a denial of the allness of the Spirit of God. And so as we are willing to face that against that to which the human mind must consistently rebel, we're coming to a high Christ truth that you can only be the child of God if you are the substance of God, the Spirit of God, which was not born of the flesh. And the parenthesis which binds you into materiality is partially broken when you are able to stand in the knowledge that your spiritual flesh existed before your physical form. Your first death was when you died to your knowledge of spirit. And that was your first birth into form. Your second death is when you die to that form. And in between, you can make your transition out of that which is called the second death by being aware and practicing the presence of your spiritual flesh. When you're told to practice the presence of God, how can you practice the presence while you're practicing the presence of a physical self, if God is not a physical self? When you're told God is the substance of all form, surely you know that God is the substance of all spiritual form, and that therefore there can be no other. Surely then you can look at your neighbor and know that you're looking at spiritual flesh through the eyes of sensation. That sensation is veiling for you the spiritual flesh that is there. But it's there. And the sense of touch is veiling for you the spiritual flesh that is there. That when you look at your mother, you're looking at mortal mind's closest approximation of what it knows as divine love. That's what motherhood represents, the world mind's closest conscious awareness of divine love. That's why not all mothers express that love. Many do. The variation is because motherhood is not a divine creation. Fatherhood, childhood, none of these are divine. Whatever dies, whatever is mortal, whatever has an ending, and every form does, is not of God. And yet, where the form ends, the spiritual flesh that is there does not end. The life which governs it and animates it is still there. And life continues to live when form dies. And yet, when you're in spiritual flesh and form dies, the life continues to live the spiritual flesh that you are through its transitional preparation into the continuity of life eternal. Now, I know this is a word lesson at this point, and it must become an experience lesson.
Well, Swami, so it seems like Herb is telling us a lot about what spirit is and what it is not. Can we talk more about that?
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to start to understand that spirit is not a power to be used to improve anything in the mental material world of energy. Yet, spirit is a demonstrable principle. The divine law is eternally functioning everywhere, always. But to express the perfection of being, we must be in spiritual identity. As the Bible says, ask in my name. Scripturally speaking, name means likeness. Spirit is whole, complete, fulfilled, and perfect. And to experience this divine truth, we must know ourselves in the way we are known by the Creator. I am everywhere, always, spirit, one. One with the one divine law is the majority. And the moment we see lack, limitation, imperfection, we are out of the divine kingdom back in the mental material world of good and evil. Unless you are healing the sick, reforming the sinner, raising the dead, what Jesus called preaching the gospel, you're still in the mind that can't bring forth the divine image. And so, by continuing to try and do things, it becomes very frustrating to us because it doesn't work that way. And when we're no longer interested in more material profit or pleasure, and we let go of the belief in two powers, and keep attention on the life, not the appearance, then we begin to see how these appearances change. That means that your belief in divine truth is graduating to faith, and then eventually understanding, where we're able to demonstrate divine law with scientific certainty.
Swami, it seems like this entire show that we've talked about already really is like the tip of the iceberg from that Mary Baker Eddy statement that I read earlier from the summary.
Yeah, absolutely. You render the divine law of healing obscure and void when you weigh the human in the scale with the divine, or limit in any direction of thought the omnipresence and omnipotence of God. End of quote. What she says there is so important to understand, not memorize and read. I think the major thing we must start to understand is the difference between thinking with our five material senses and knowing, because we will never know the truth with the mind we're using to get us through this lifetime. We have to graduate from material sense, sowing to the flesh, to spiritual understanding and sowing to the spirit.
Well, that wraps up our show for today. So listeners, be sure to visit the website, www.ipdtransform.com. On any of the pages, when you scroll down, you'll see buttons that you can press that can further your spiritual understanding. Swami, any final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance, get the light in your soul, and be a faithful witness to the divine creation. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.